Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. If you've ever met a stranger, looked into their eyes, and suddenly experienced those funny, familiar, forgotten feelings, like the song says, that sensation may be a sign of a past life with that person. Groundbreaking psychiatrist and best-selling author of Many Lives, Many Masters, Dr. Brian Weiss says one of the most common signs of a past life is déjà vu, the sensation that you've met a person before or have visited some place previously. Sometimes this deja vu, he says, is, or this deja vu feeling, is a sign of a past life with a particular person. Dave Bettenhausen and Carla Bogney Kidd met in 1998, and they had those funny, familiar, forgotten feelings. After practicing meditation, they believe they discovered a portal to their past lives. The two say they've had they have a spiritual kinship that's taken them through 29 previous shared incarnations. The story they tell in The Gift of Past Lives with Mother Isabella God and Elizabeth aims to liberate people from the traps of conceit, jealousy, and selfishness, and choose love in all actions. Their remarkable story is next when Coast to Coast AM returns. Dave Bettenhausen serves as the vice president of medical affairs at a small Midwestern hospital. Whether he's at the hospital or his private practices, Dave daily coaches his patients about their well-being mentally, physically, and spiritually. He believes in a holistic approach to life and regularly lectures and conducts discussions with groups of patients and physicians on healthcare. He has a personal interest in the stages of grief with death, dying, and spirituality. Carla Bogney Kidd has been on a lifelong journey of spirituality, always seeking her purpose and very often serving as a vessel for others' journeys. The theme running through her life has been to help others. That's where she feels the happiest. Carla is quite comfortable speaking with people about their innermost feelings and challenges. Her closest friends have often referred to her as their personal counselor. And Carla and Dave are co-authors of The Gift of Past Lives with Mother Isabella, God, and Elizabeth. Welcome to you both to Coast AM. How are you?
Good morning, Richard.
Yep, good morning or good evening, however you like to say it. Richard, it's great to be with you.
Great to have you here. So take us back to how the two of you got to know each other, I guess, over 20 years ago now, 1998. How did you come together? And then we'll get into how you figured out you shared all of these past lives together.
Well, back in 1998, Richard, I was just finishing my residency in Ohio, and I was looking for a practice to buy. And I was introduced on the phone to another doctor who was getting ready to retire and sell his practice. And at that time, I really didn't realize that Carla was that doctor's wife, and she became my office manager. And really, we skipped forward 16 years because we just worked in the office. We were really best of friends and doing well. And that's when things started to get, I'll say, worse, and Carla can kind of explain that a little.
Well, we had implemented electronic medical records in 2014, and anyone that's done that knows, oh, there are headaches that go with it. And Dave, who normally is like Fred Flintstone or Barney, happy-go-lucky, was so grouchy, unapproachable, and I thought, you know, something's going on here. Either he needs to get in for counseling, his patients were starting to notice it, or we needed to do something. So I suggested one day to him that we try meditation because I had read something in AARP about it. And we decided to do it. Dave said, okay, let's meditate.
So we did. We started meditating every day. And the first thing I can tell you, Richard, is that it became incredibly peaceful because when medical records started doing electronics, I was getting up at 5 in the morning and working till almost 8 o'clock at night. Those first 3-4 months of switching over to a new system were just awful. And so I got to the office still at 5 in the morning, and I was starting on doing notes and opening things and getting things ready so I could continue to see patients like I had always seen them. And we actually shut the computer off and sat for 30 minutes with a candle, lights, and some music, and relaxed. And almost immediately I started to feel better. It was just a few days in, and there was suddenly a day where I thought I saw a woman while I was meditating. And it was a strange feeling, but I looked at her, and she reminded me of Carla from a side view because of her eyelashes. And the woman kept showing me a shoe. And I saw the shoe and this woman, and I thought, and she was happy and laughing. And right after we meditated, I ran in and said, "Carla, I think I was seeing and talking to your mother." And her mother had passed away 18 years ago.
And you had never met, correct? You had never met her mother.
Never met. Yep, I had never met. And Carla brought up on the computer screen 60 pair of shoes that kind of showed on this one site. And I walked over and pointed to a shoe. And what'd you say, Carla?
I said, well, it was not possible for him to know that was the shoe she wore. My mother was a ballroom dancer, and she had a particular style of shoe that she was comfortable in, that she wore for her entire life, and she actually would wear the same sandal for dressing besides ballroom. There's no way out of all those shoes Dave could have picked that out.
So that was the first moment that I thought, this meditation is something different. So we kept meditating every day. And again, when you said the title of the book, it talks about with Mother Isabella, God, and Elizabeth. So Mother was the first entity that I kind of was introduced to during meditation. So we kept meditating, and I would see colors and lights, and then I started seeing strange little visions. I saw a Mayan temple one day. I saw this big gold dome in Boston. I saw stuffed squirrels along the side of a wall, some hieroglyphics. It was very strange. And I would tell Carla and or Paula, her sister, who was meditating with us, that I'm seeing these little things, and I don't even know what they mean. So one day I was meditating, and I had a memory of me at a beach with my family. This was from a memory from 1962. I was only 3 years old. My father was in grad school. My mother and sister and I went along to the summer and moved to Boston for him to go to grad school. Carla looked at me and said, "What? I didn't have any idea you were ever were in Boston." And the reality is, I lived in Nebraska, and Carla at that time lived in Boston, and they were from Boston. And we had never brought the subject up for 18, 20 years. So when I mentioned having that memory during meditation, they both looked at me and said, "Well, tell us more." And I explained, "Well, I remembered that I saw this beach and that there was an amusement park in the background. There was a Ferris wheel and little feet hanging and blue and red buckets and stuff hanging there, and I was running on the beach screaming and yelling because I had never seen a beach because there were no beaches in Nebraska. And suddenly I heard this little voice yell, and it said, 'Be quiet, you're disturbing my family.' And this little girl shoved me backward in the sand, sat on my chest, planted a kiss on my forehead. She jumped up, she put her hands on her hips, wearing this angry face. And she had this little two-piece blue bathing suit with ruffles and little pot belly hanging out. And I heard the woman with her yell, 'Carla, that is not how a young lady behaves.'"
That was me.
That was you, Carla.
Yes, I always have to say the pot belly.
Okay, hang on now, Dave. This memory that you're having, a trip to Boston in 1962, I think you said, or 63.
Yes.
Were those details, did you remember those details, or did they only come to you through meditation?
They really only came to me through meditation. Interestingly enough, we'll talk a little about past life regression and meditation, but both of those tend to center in the same portion of the subconscious brain that opens up, and that's a place that memories are stored. Carla, tell us about what you remember about that day.
Well, I always remembered that story, not from Dave's point of view, but because I was raised with, there were five girls in my family. I was the baby. My parents were a good Catholic family, always trying to stay together. They had separated many times over the years. But this particular day, my parents, who did not have a car, we were not well off, rented two cabs, and all seven of us went to Revere Beach. And for whatever reason that day, when we arrived, I did not have a bathing suit. Everybody else had theirs. I didn't. So my parents took all of us across the street to one of those little souvenir shops, and they bought my first brand-new two-piece blue ruffled bathing suit. And first of all, I never had anything brand-new, so I remembered this. I always inherited from my sisters. And second of all, I remember the day because we got a cab, which we never did. We walked everywhere. We got the bus. The sister, just 16 months older than me, was whining because she wasn't getting a new bathing suit. My older sister was whining because she had to come with her family that day and wasn't with her friends. So it stuck in my mind, and what stuck in my mind more than anything is that my family was together that day, and they were trying to get along. So when Dave said this, you can imagine Paula and I had, you know, goosebumps and chills up our back. He could not possibly have remembered this day like we remembered it. It was surreal.
And so you remember an encounter with a little boy that you told to be quiet because he was bothering your family. You remember pushing him down and jumping on him and kissing him on the forehead.
Well, I didn't remember that until like 3 years ago. 3 years ago was actually my first regression. All of the information that we put into the Gift of Past Lives was not through regression. It was only through Dave and meditation. But through regression, I saw the whole thing. Now, I remember going and getting the bathing suit and being with my family. I remembered a little boy. I didn't remember what I had done that day until regression.
Anyway, it was kind of interesting. Yeah, so we had this experience from 1962 that neither of us really remembered. And then I didn't even walk into and meet Carla again and didn't really remember until it was almost 36 years later.
Right. That chance encounter nearly 60 years ago now,
mm-hmm.
and then for you to meet up again and have this professional relationship, office manager and running this practice, Dave, I mean, what are the odds? Have you ever even sat down and tried to figure out what are the odds that you would hook up with this person again?
You know, I try to think of that, and every once in a while, and especially since we wrote the book, I've had people come up and say, you know, I had an experience just like that where I met somebody 20 years later. And I sort of believe that there is a draw that people have. And that draw will sometimes pull you together because sometimes things are just meant to be. And I'll tell you another little story. One evening after we had started to meditate, I was sleeping. I was seeing myself in this dark alley. There were men surrounding me. I saw Carla off on the side of the alley watching. Now, I knew it was Carla because of her steel blue eyes, but she looked different. She was younger, blonde, dressed like a flapper. Then I felt this thud, almost like I was punched in the chest. I fell backwards. I realized I'd been shot by one of these men. Everything sort of went black. And then when I came to, I realized I had fallen out of bed. I'd hit the lamp on the way down, knocked over the bedside table. And I was like, what is this? And the next day, I started to get more details while meditating. I learned that this was another life, a life before now. I learned that the young flapper's name was Ruby. My name was Jonathan, or JJ, as they called me. when I got to the office, I began kind of sharing these memories with Carla and details with Carla. I have to tell you still, Richard, at this time, I thought that maybe I was a little bit nuts. You know, I'm a physician. I thought, I'm not talking to the spirit world. I'm not seeing things in the that happened in 1925. But that's what I found out. Over the next few months, we received details about a 1925 life. I found out that Ruby's full name was Ruby Donaldson. She'd entered, actually, we had met at a wedding of somebody who was a mobster named Angelo. I found out she was born in Bullock, Georgia, that we had met at this wedding. And it was just almost things that I had never believed or never thought was even possible.
Right. Now, how did you learn these details about her name, where you met, and so forth? Did that come through meditation as well?
That came through meditation. I literally, during meditation, lived parts of these past lives. I met Ruby the next day after the wedding. We went on a walk on Michigan, Lake Michigan. She was telling about her dreams and life and her name and where she was from. So, you know, I sort of told Carla all these things that I was finding out.
And Carla, as he's telling you these things, I mean, at this point, what are your beliefs about reincarnation?
Well, I had always been a believer. I've always been very open, and I've always questioned everything. So it was not surprising to me that he had seen my mother. It was surprising to me that she came to him and not me. But we found out later that in this life, Dave also would have been my brother because my mother had miscarried him before me.
So okay, I don't want to get too far ahead here, but she's interesting. Getting back to Ruby, this flapper from the 1920s, as he's telling you this, did this twig anything internal, any memories, any dreams you may have had about being a flapper named Ruby from 1925?
Well, it's not that I had a dream. It's that, ironically, twice in my life, once going to a costume party, another time going to a mystery dinner, I dressed up as a blonde flapper. So that was kind of funny that I would choose that. And then I was off work one day, and with all of these details that Dave had been providing, I got onto Ancestry.com, and I started to look up some of these things, and didn't I find Ruby Donaldson, born in Bullock, Georgia, 1904, and she was one of 11 children born to James and Anna Donaldson. I also found a mobster before Al Capone named Angelo Jenna in Chicago, and I found newspaper clippings from the wedding. It was January the 10th, 1925. The reason, well, besides the fact that he was a well-known mobster and was getting married, but it was a picture of the wedding cake because the wedding cake was over 10 feet tall. It was serving 3,000.
Okay, pardon the interruption, Carl. I'm going to jump in here. We'll pick up on this story when we come back. Here's another Ruby, Ruby Waters and Rabbit Hole, originally from Shelburne, Ontario, now based in Toronto. Back with more on Coast to Coast AM. As if Australia wasn't home to enough poisonous critters, even some of its trees are capable of stinging you, apparently, thanks to fine hairs on their leaves that deliver a potent neurotoxin. One notable example, Dendrocyanide excelsa, or gimpy, can be found in the rainforests of northeast Australia. Those unfortunate enough to brush up against it with bare skin can expect an intense burning followed by the sensation of having one's hand slammed in a car door. The pain is so bad it can sometimes last days or even weeks in extreme cases. Now, according to a new study involving an analysis of the tree's molecular structure, scientists have discovered that its toxins are not dissimilar to those produced by spiders and scorpions. And you can read more of this story in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. Tonight, Sunday night into Monday morning on Coast to Coast, don't forget to check it out, the intrepid George Knapp welcomes former executive director of the think tank Center for Planetary Culture, radical futurist and philosopher Daniel Pinchbeck. He'll talk about his online course on how to explore other worlds and access multidimensional consciousness. That'll be followed by Ryan Robbins, creator of the Post-Disclosure World YouTube channel. He spends hours every day following closely and studying the current events related to our march toward UFO disclosure. And George and he will discuss all the latest UFO news, along with what the world will look like when everyone finally knows the truth, that we're not alone. That's tonight, Sunday morning, or Sunday night, rather, into Monday morning on Coast to Coast AM with George Knapp. And we will get back to more of my conversation with Dave and Carla talking reincarnation right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. We're back with Dave Bettenhausen and Carla Bogney Kidd. They've been friends since 1998, and through meditation, they've discovered that they've spent or shared 29 previous incarnations, 29 past lives together. They are the co-authors of The Gift of Past Lives with Mother Isabella and God and Elizabeth. And so we were talking about a previous incarnation. You were a flapper named Ruby in the 1920s, Carla. Dave was your husband. Where did we left off, you had gone on to Ancestry.com. And you were able to verify that these people actually existed, and that you did in fact meet at a wedding by a mobster by the name of Angelo in Chicago. What else did you learn?
Well, actually, Dave was not my husband. We never got that far. But Dave, I'll let you finish that part.
Yeah. So what actually ended up happening is, during meditation, I would get more and more of the story. One day I've got an incredibly detailed portion of the story, and I came in the office the next day, and we meditated, and then I started to tell Carla more of the story, and we had met at this wedding. We ended up being involved for a very short period of time, a couple weeks. I ended up, as we were talking, I started to become J.J. Wright, this person. I literally felt like I was J.J. I was looking at the flapper, Carla. I was telling her feelings. We were having the conversations at the wedding again, and Carla started to finish my sentences because she tapped into this, and she started to have the same memories I did. And while we were doing that, we started to feel some of the emotions of J.J., and Ruby, and we actually started to feel very uncomfortable because I was married to Tom, and I bought his practice, and we had been really best of friends, but we suddenly had an emotional connection because we had a memory of being together in 1925, and we actually jumped up quickly from the room and both left and started going to see patients and working because we actually had an emotional connection when I was telling her the story.
And Carla, as he suddenly becomes JJ, as he becomes JJ, did you suddenly become Ruby?
I did, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. I remember this feeling coming over me like, what is this? I was having these feelings for this man that I didn't have in the present, and it was unbelievable, and I just knew it was very sticky and very uncomfortable, and I wanted to get away from it. Again, I ran out of the room and avoided him all day.
And how did your husband at the time, or your husband, Carla, how did he deal with this? And Dave, you were married at the time as well. How did your wife deal with it?
Well, I was going through some difficult times with my wife as things were, and she was really, again, I was raised Catholic, and she thought all of this was nonsense, and we went on to get a divorce. Tom and Carla are still together, and as we went through continuing to meditate and continuing to try to document things that we learned, Tom's been very involved. He sits down and listens when we talk, and he's read the book.
Actually, he's rereading it right now, Richard.
Yeah.
Because Tom's also been in many of our lives, like 16 times. Tom actually was James Donaldson, Ruby's father, in the past life.
Interesting.
We tend to travel in packs. Yeah, we found a lot of that where...
We travel in packs from... Okay.
Yep.
Yes.
We travel in what we call family mates and karmic mates, those people that either have helped us along the way many times in past lives or people that we've developed karma with that we need to return to and try to fix some of that karma.
So, Dave, you were shot by these mobsters. Did you find out why?
Because Angelo Jenna thought that he owned the flapper Ruby who worked in his speakeasy, and I was some boy who showed up interested in his flapper, and basically I had to be put out of my position and taken out because Ruby skipped work one day to spend time with me. And so basically I was being punished for having that experience.
Permanently.
So,
permanently punished. That's right.
Right. Now, so at this point, this is your first inkling that you've shared, not an inkling, obviously a very strong impression, you've shared a past life together. When did you discover that there were others?
Well, we continued to meditate. And I told you about the Gold Dome, which sort of tied into Carla being born in Boston, but we found another life in Boston that became part of a Civil War life. The hieroglyphics, we found an Egyptian life. We continued to work on some of these things. I know it's strange. I told you there was these stuffed squirrels. They showed up in a life at the Mayan times. We found a life at Viking times, which was about 1,100 years ago. Maybe Carla will tell you a little bit about that one.
Oh, well, 1,100 years ago, actually. There was a father and son named Amos and Bane, and they were actually looking for limestone to build a new home, and that was in the area of what is now Edinburgh, Scotland. And they came across a red crystal that was embedded in a piece of marble. And it happens that Bane was getting married to a man and woman named Odin Finella, and that was actually Dave and I. They were marrying Odin Finella's daughter, Agnes. So he presented them with this red crystal as part of the dowry for marrying their daughter, believing it had some value.
And so about 8 years before that, we found out in this life, Odin Finella, which were really Kahedich and Kahelder, were actually Vikings that landed to invade Scotland. We had been planning to pillage, murder, rape, burn the village down, so I can tell you we're not always good people in our past lives. But when we got there, the people of Scotland were delightful. They were poor. We found no reason to even take anything from them. We couldn't actually come up with a reason. They had no wealth. And it was so beautiful there, the Scottish people actually accepted us, and a small group of us Vikings actually stayed and became part of the Scottish clan that was there.
And the name of the clan was called the McKay clan. What's interesting about the McKay clan is they eventually became the McKee clan. Why is that interesting to us? Because my mother's maiden name in this life was McKee, which is crazy. And another, these names seem to follow us over and over again. What's interesting is that Tom and I had gone to Scotland years ago, and Tom's last name is Kidd, and he wanted to find out if the Kidds had a tartan. We found out during that time that the Kidds didn't have a tartan because they actually worked for the McPhersons. The McPhersons had a tartan. Now, why did this send shivers up my spine? Because my first husband's mother was a McPherson, which means Tom's family, my second husband, actually worked for my first husband's family, the McPhersons.
Wow.
We're all intertwined now, over and over.
Right, right. And it appears that we are our own ancestors.
We are.
We are our own ancestors. And that brings up another little interesting fact that we sort of have found out. First thing, in our past lives, we found ourselves as English fighting the Scottish, Scottish fighting the Vikings, Vikings fighting the English. And again, we've lived on every side, and we find out we're actually fighting ourselves, and that's part of that same karma. We also discovered a fact that is sort of blew us away when we found this out. That crystal, red crystal stone that was found by Blaine and his father back then when they were, gave it to us as part of the dowry, that same crystal came from Scotland. We found out that rubies actually still do grow in Scotland. And we found out that rubies only grow in the presence without...
In
the absence of silica and iron, which are the most abundant minerals on the earth. So rubies are actually incredibly rare. Finding them in Scotland is even more rare. But we found that that same stone has passed down through many, many, many lives. And a part of that stone is actually became part of the ring that Ruby Donaldson, a flapper, wore. That she got from her great aunt. And so part of that stone actually was still still moving through lives 1,100 years later, and that stone became part of the ring that's actually on the front cover of our book, The Gift of Past Lives.
Ah, now how did you verify that Ruby had that same stone?
Well, most of that is through actually what we learned during meditation. Now, interestingly enough, we went back and we tried to research everything they told us, and we found that indeed there was a ruby that showed up in the Scottish jewels, showed up in the scepter of Henry V, that was traded for slaves by the Catholic Church, that... ended up, a portion of it ended up back in actually the chalice in Boston, and a part of it was sold by a jewelry store in Atlanta, Georgia. That's right, Atlanta, Georgia, that Ruby's great aunt, whose name was also Ruby, owned and passed it to Ruby.
That, and Richard, there's actually, it's like a little separate vignette in the back of The Gift of Past Lives. It's called The Journey of the Red Ruby Crystal. That red ruby crystal actually changes hands 34 times, which is the number of lives that I have had, past lives 34 times.
Remarkable.
And one of the points
remarkable.
We make even in the book is, of course, the silica and iron are the most common minerals on the planet, and yet Ruby has none of those, and that love also cannot exist with conceit, selfishness, and jealousy, which is the most abundant emotions on the earth.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about the technique you were using, the meditation technique you were using that allowed you to experience or relive parts of these previous lives. First you, Dave.
Well,
how were you meditating?
Every day I sat quietly with music going. I would start to see colors, pictures. I would actually try to focus, and it felt like I was focusing backwards, looking at something that wasn't me. And then I would start to see visions. Then I would hear them. I literally could smell them, taste them. The pictures were very vivid. at the beginning, it was like watching a movie, but after a while, it became becoming part of the movie, actually seeing through whoever's eyes it was at that time. I could literally describe the environment, what I was wearing, what was going on. We didn't really know exactly what I was doing at that time, except that I was sort of guided along the way. Again, title of the book has Isabella in there, and I met Isabella, which is my personal spirit guide, who has apparently been with me for 6,000 years, and she helped guide me through some of this. She introduced us to many lessons. Part of the book is the lessons that the five simple rules. And but during those times, Isabella would literally take me to a time period, an experience. We would start to journal these things because they were coming so quickly. After that, we actually did go to a Brian Weiss, since you mentioned him at the beginning of the show. We went to a Brian Weiss seminar because we were doing really self-past life regression and didn't realize even what it was. There were times when I would go into meditation and Carla would start to ask me questions, and she would literally take me on the same path that we learned when we went to the Brian Weiss thing, but we were sort of doing it spontaneously without anybody else helping us. The Brian Weiss seminar, by the way, was an incredible experience.
That was just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here because we're going to take a time out here as we approach the top of the hour, and we'll get into some of those five rules of karma on the other side. We'll also, at the bottom of the next hour, we'll open up the phone lines and take questions and comments and continue to delve into this remarkable story. So, Dave, Carla, you hold on. And here is John Fogarty of Creedence Clearwater Revival and his children, Shane, Tyler, and Kelsey. They form a group called Fogarty's Factory. And this is called Blue Boy, taking us into the break here on Coast to Coast AM.